All right, so how many of you guys resist getting upgrades on your iPhone? Anybody like me in the room? Does everyone love an upgrade? Just raise your hand. Like, yeah, I love an upgrade. Do any of you have phones? Are you awake right now? How many people like upgrades, right? Okay, how many don't like upgrades? Nobody? I'm the only one like that. I'm the only grumpy old curmudgeon in the room. Okay, I hate upgrades. Why do you think I hate upgrades other than I'm an old man? Not like new stuff. I do. I like new stuff, but what? Okay, I hate the expensive part of it. Even if it's free, though, I resist. I hate all the downloads and the uploads and the sideways loads that you have to do to like fix your phone. You know what I'm talking about? Like, you get the new phone, and it's not just like, hey, it works all of a sudden. It's like, hey, upgrade this app, change this thing, like fix with these settings, and nothing ever works. So it's like, this works. I like it. It's 100 years old, but you know what? It works. And if I go to the store and the dude sells me some like crazy plan, guess what? It's not going to work for like 2 weeks or 2 months. I'm going to be asking Donnie like, hey, fix my phone, bro. Because like I won't be able to do it. So I resist upgrades because I'm comfortable with this one. I like this one. There's this dude I know. His name's Jordan. Some of you guys might remember Jordan Phillips. He kind of looks like Luke. But he's not Luke. This dude totally resisted upgrades in his life. Like his whole life was that way. So he was from a really big family. He had like 600 brothers or sisters or something weird like that. And they were super simple. It was like that type of family. So he had this phone. We bullied him. Excuse me. We bullied him because like he needed it though. It was good for him because his phone was like this big and it would like fit in his pocket. He'd take it out to dial it. It'd be like one of these and he'd be like spinning it. Like it was an old phone. And people gave him such grief over it. And so we go to Guatemala. We're hanging out in Guatemala. And if you've gone, you know, like when we go to the jungle, there's this really cool spot along the river where you can hang hammocks. And we sleep in our hammocks there. And everyone fights over these two trees because there's a waterfall. And then there's these two awesome trees where you can hang a hammock like over the water, but you can still get into it from the ground. It's like really sweet. And you can like sleep over the river. So Jordan, he fought hard. He got it this year, right? And he's like laying in this hammock, sleeping all night. We're all jealous. The next morning, Jordan wakes up and he's like, ah! We're like, did you die? Did you get stung by a scorpion or something? He's like, my phone is gone. I'm like, how do you lose a phone that's 6 feet tall? Like, it's the biggest thing. And so he's like, no, I lost my phone. So we're all happy. We're like, yes, we can finally stop bullying this guy because of his atrocious phone. Just get a new phone, dude. It's a free upgrade by now. And he's like, no, I have to find this phone. And he refuses to go anywhere till we find it. So everyone like tries to help. And we look around. We're spending forever looking for this dumb phone until one of us had the genius idea after 2 hours, finally, of going, why don't we call the phone, right? Somebody calls it. And as we're sitting on the side of the river, like we hear, bring, bring. Like seriously, the old school ring. And we look down and the like water's lighting up. And we're like, bro. When you were sleeping, your phone fell out of the hammock. It is 4 feet down right now, hidden under rocks. Like, that dude was so serious about not upgrading. He jumps in this river, right, in the rapids part. He, like, swims down. He finds this phone. And the second he takes it out, obviously, it just dies. It goes black. And we're like, yeah, like, the phone's finally dead. And someone had the genius idea. Do you guys know you can do this? You, like, pull out the battery and do some other, like, voodoo magic on it and put it in rice. And, like, it comes back to life. I didn't know that was a thing, but it worked. And so we're all bummed. We're like, oh, the phone just resurrected. Like, it's back to life again. Why did you even do that for Jordan? But see, Jordan didn't want to upgrade because he was so comfortable with that phone. He knew how it worked. He loved his phone. He didn't care that it was huge, this big brick phone. He loved that old phone. And as we're walking through 1 Corinthians 15, right, Paul's talking to us about this topic of life. What's life? Why is it important? And he's talking to us about the resurrection, remember? And people saying, it's not real. No one can rise from the dead. That's a bunch of like legacy. Like that's legend. That's not true. And Paul's like, no, I'm going to lay out why you can believe it. Okay. He's got people telling him the same thing. Believe it or not, like they're so comfortable in their old broken life that when Paul comes along, he's like, listen, Jesus has this unbelievable upgrade for you. They're like, no, actually, I just want to sit right here. Like, I'm good in this. As ridiculous as it looks, I like my sin, and I like my old ways of doing things, and I like the flesh, and I'm comfortable in this world. Why would I want to have to trade up? Because when I trade up, you know what I'm going to have to do? I'm going to have to give that up. And that's like really enticing. Like, that's fun. I love this life. And I'm so comfortable with it. Why would I ever do an upgrade? And Paul's trying to tell us over the next few verses, we're going to read 1 Corinthians 15, verses 35 to 49. And in these verses, he is going to tell us how unbelievable this upgrade is that Jesus is going to give us when he gives us this new life and these glorified bodies. And it's going to blow your mind, hopefully, if you're awake, if you're actually here tonight. So read with me 1 Corinthians 15 and listen to this. Starting in verse 35, he says, "But someone will ask," because he knows inevitably there will be that turd in the crowd, right? "How are the dead raised? With what kind of body do they come?" "You foolish person," he says. "What you sow doesn't come to life unless it dies. And what you sow is not the body that's to be, but a bare kernel, perhaps of wheat or some other grain. But God gives it a body as he has chosen, and to each kind of seed its own body. For not all flesh is the same, but there's one kind for humans, another for animals, another for birds, and another for fish. They're heavenly bodies, earthly bodies. But the glory of the heavenly is of one kind, and the glory of the earthly is of another. There's one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, another glory of the stars. For stars differ from star in glory. So it is with the resurrection of the dead. What's sown is perishable. What's raised is imperishable. It's sown in dishonor, but it's raised in glory. It's sown in weakness, but it's raised in power. It's sown a natural body, but it's raised a spiritual body. If there's a natural body, there's also a spiritual body. Thus it's written, the first man, Adam, became a living being. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. But it's not the spiritual that's first, but the natural, and then the spiritual. The first man was from the earth, a man of dust. The second man is from heaven. As was the man of dust, so also are those who are dust. And as is the man of heaven, so also are those who are of heaven. Just as we have borne the image of the man of dust, we shall also bear the image of the man of heaven. Dude, Paul is talking about some unbelievable upgrades in life. Paul is talking about how God is going to completely transform us. Look at what he says in verse 35. He starts off and he's like, immediately, I'm just going to address the question, right? It's the elephant in the room. There's Greeks there who are like, no, our souls are like a spark and it goes up to the big fire. There's a bonfire, right? And we just become a fire and lose all of our identity and we become one big spirit. And we sing kumbaya. And like, that's what they thought. You're not you in the afterlife. You just become part of a bigger thing. Paul's like, no, you're going to ask the question, right? You're going to question how the dead can be raised. That's not possible. We don't see people come back to life. Even though they did when Jesus was alive and raised dead people, even though Jesus himself did, they're asking the question. And then they say, with what kind of body do they come? Here's what they're trying to say. What if, dude, what if Ethan goes swimming out on Cocoa Beach and a shark comes and bites his arm off, swallows it? And then another shark buddy comes along, grabs his leg and eats his leg off. But then there's like three more sharks and they start eating and they all get a piece of Ethan and they all swallow him. But then they all swim off to different parts. And they poop them out. What's going to happen? How is God ever going to track down all those little pieces of Ethan and put them back together to raise him up, to make him a new person and give him a new body? How's that possible, right? We can think of like a million scenarios where we would ask that question. Someone gets burned in fire and the wind blows and their ashes get scattered. Like, how does God find it all? God is not sitting in heaven going, oh no, what am I going to do? It's not him. I think it's awesome that today we know about DNA, right? DNA, the code God uses, the literal blueprints to make you exactly who you are. God not only knows it perfectly, he designed it and created it. All God needs to know is your DNA, right? And boom, you're you again. But the thing is, even that limits God. God doesn't even need that. We're talking about the God who created life to begin with out of nothing. And then we're like, how could he bring you back to life? Well, how did he do it in the first place out of nothing? I think he can handle a reboot, right? Like, this limitless God, we're trying to limit him. And Paul's like, you are foolish. He says, you foolish person. The question is like, it's so insane to try to limit a boundless creator. God can do what he wants. There's no end to his power. So how would you wonder if God could figure out how to do this? And he says this, he says, what you sow doesn't come to life unless it dies. Paul's like, let me explain it to you in layman's terms, a way we can understand. And he switches this thing over and gives us this analogy of a farmer, right? Walks out on his field, he takes a bunch of seed and he throws the seeds out. What happens to the seed? They go into the dirt, they get buried, kind of like we do when we die, right? And then that shell, the seed part, actually has to die, wither, dry up, and break open so what's inside can pop up and spring to life. And if that seed never opens and never dies, nothing inside will come to life. And so Paul's using this analogy to say, just like you, you're in this broken, sinful body that has to be put to death because you can't stand in the presence of God the way you are. How are you going to stand in front of a perfect, all-powerful God whose glory is enough to eradicate you from complete existence, just standing in that type of glory that's too powerful to even be in his presence? We can't handle it in these bodies. We can't handle it in broken flesh. But we say we're comfortable there. We say it's enough. And God says it can't be enough because unless it dies, your new life that can stand in my presence, that can experience the fullness of my glory, that can live for eternity that I made you for, none of that's possible in that body, in that life. That has to die so that you can truly live. It's like a farmer throwing seeds. Look what he says in verse 37. He says, and what you sow is not the body that is to be. It's just a bare kernel, seed, perhaps of wheat or some other grain. But God gives it a body as he has chosen. And to each kind of seed, its own body. This deal where we're like, hey, God, how are you going to do this? How are you going to resurrect the dead? How are you going to give me a new body? How are you going to pull this off? Man, it's looking at a limitless God and trying to put boundaries around him. Trying to say you're not capable of doing something that he clearly says, that's exactly what I do. This body dies and I give you something brand new and I've chosen it, it says. Each kind of seed, I give its own body. God has this entire thing meticulously planned out for you and me. And we're trying to like outsmart him. Instead of just trust that the creator of everything also has a plan for exactly how everything will come to be. But the doubt that sets in is because we're comfortable where we're at. Jesus wants to wake us up and show us that what's better is so much better, you're never going to want to stay back here anymore. It'll be like, hold me back. You can't keep me in this life. I want to go be with Jesus. But that body has to die, he says. That's that seed that falls in the ground so that real life can come. That sin has to be put to death. It has to be given up. This physical body needs to die so we can get a brand new, transformed, immortal, glorified body. Look what he says in verse 39. He says, for not all flesh is the same. There's one kind for humans. And he goes on and lists, right? Animals, birds, fish, all these heavenly bodies, stars, and they're all different. He's like, everything has its own form. God is this God of just, he does variety and beautiful things. He's limitless. Why do you think that God is going to look at you and say, hey, Rob, broken old Rob, I'm going to resurrect you, but you're coming back to life. Guess how? Exactly the same as you were. He's not going to take broken you and make you another broken you. He's not going to even take a limited you and make another limited you in that way. And when I say limited, I mean the way that Adam was in the garden when he was formed and shaped from the clay, but still limited. He was perfect, but he wasn't this glorified body. As a matter of fact, he could have chose life, and I wonder if he had taken from the tree of life instead, if at that moment he would have been given the glorified body. But instead, he chose from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and he died. And that's us. We live in that state, in that downgrade that we got from the Garden of Eden when God was offering Adam the upgrade that he didn't take. And now he offers it still to us. from down here, from way, not even just like the way we were created, but even worse, broken, to glorified and unbelievable and unimaginable how he wants to make us be. Y'all, that's the offer here. It's not like, oh yeah, just live the same way you're living with all the same pain, with all the same stuff. Just do a redo of this whole thing. That is not what Jesus is offering you. He's offering you something you can't even imagine. Pleasures that have no concept in our minds because we just can't even wrap our heads around it. So if you are tempted to think, man, I don't know if I want to do that again. Listen, you're not even grasping what he's telling you, what he's offering you tonight. Look what he says in verse, excuse me, in verse 42. So it is with the resurrection of the dead. What is sown is perishable, and what is raised is imperishable. Now listen, like, there's some cool things to point out here before we move on. Jesus is telling us, or Paul here is telling us really, that just as God made all these different bodies, heavenly bodies, physical, earthly bodies, animals, us, he's like, we will have this incredible new thing, this resurrected body. And he gives us some examples in scripture, right? Matthew 17 tells us this. And behold, there appeared to them, ready for this? Moses and Elijah talking with him. And Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it's good that we're here. If you wish, I will make three tents here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. Okay, so you look back at the Greek people who are like, nah, listen, like, we just go into a flame and you're not you anymore. And here, clearly, Matthew is telling us what he saw were three distinct people in glorified bodies. He could tell the difference between Moses and Elijah and Jesus. They retained their identity, but yet they were upgraded with glorious, glorified bodies. They didn't just disappear into some big spiritual nothing, all unified, and they lose everything they are. No, they were still them, but upgraded. Revelation 20:12, John tells us, he says, he's got this vision of heaven, and he says, I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged by what was written in the books. Listen, according to what they had done. John's in heaven watching these people, and he can tell the difference. He sees great and small, right? They're being judged individually by what they've done. We retain our identity. Some people are so scared. Like, if I accept Jesus and I go to heaven, it's just going to be this boring thing. We're just going to, like, disappear into this big spiritual thing. Or I'm going to be sitting on a cloud with a harp, and it's going to be boring all day long. That is not the picture that Jesus gives us of our eternity. It's mind-boggling. It's something incomprehensible, something so amazing that John and Paul don't even have words to fully describe. But they do a pretty good job here. Listen to what they say in verse 42. As he describes these things, right? It's sown perishable, but raised imperishable. Like Adam in the garden, right? When he sinned, he took of that tree, and he was broken, perished. And so now when we're born, we are perishable. We have like an expiration date, 80, 90 years, maybe. Some people today live 100 and 100 something, right? Like nobody makes it to 200 nowadays, okay? Before Noah, maybe, but not anymore. And that means we're perishable. We die. We fade. We break. We wear down. That's just the reality of it. But what was sown, what the seed that was thrown perishable, like us, he's going to raise up imperishable. There's no breaking down. There's no getting old. There's no expiration date. There's no death in a resurrected body. No getting sick, right? Then he says, what's sown in dishonor turns to glory. All that shame from your sin, guilt from your bad habits and memories that you have of past things you've done, all that you carry around in dishonor, where you have dishonored your creator, he raises it up in glory. He wipes away the sin and the shame and the guilt. You're able to stand before him declared innocent in a brand new perfect body. That's because of what Jesus has done. And then he says, what was sown in weakness becomes power. It doesn't take long for us to figure out we're weak, right? When we're feeling good and everything's great, we feel like we're invincible. And then you like, you're being invincible and you sprain your ankle and you're like, I can't even take a shower now. Like, I can't even move. I can't walk. Like, my whole life is over. You realize how fragile you really are. You get a cold and you get the sniffles and you're like, I'm dying. Like, we realize, well, maybe that's just me, but I'm like, I'm fragile. I know that. My health is fragile. My body is fragile. We all are because we're human and we were made in weakness because of sin. But he's going to raise us in power, unimaginable power that we can't even comprehend right now because it's from God himself. And then he says, what's natural, what's so natural, will be made spiritual. Man, this one is like mystery. It's so hard to figure out what actually he means here because it's unbelievable. But our current bodies are these natural bodies. And somehow we will be given spiritual bodies for eternity that can exist in the spiritual realm and the physical realm. Right now, you can't. You can't just like go be with God in the spiritual realm. You can't handle it. Your body can't do it. Imagine your body's like a spacesuit, you know? God's like, here's your spacesuit. But it's only good for Earth. You leave Earth and guess what? Like, that's it. It's as far as you go. Imagine going to heaven, like the spiritual realm. You can't do it, but this body will be able to do it. It's going to be to that level. I know that because Luke 20 tells us this. Jesus said to them, the sons of this age marry and are given in marriage. But those who are considered worthy to attain to that age and to the resurrection from the dead, neither marry nor are given in marriage, for they cannot die anymore because they're equal to angels and are sons of God, being sons of the resurrection. Luke is telling us here, just like the angels, we don't even have to get married and have children anymore. We do that now. You know why? Because you live like 100 years. So in like 100 and whatever years, when everybody dies, if there's no kids, guess what? We stop. The human race ceases to exist. We have to have children so the human race can keep going in a broken, sinful world. There will be a day where we're made so perfect and eternal, we won't have to have kids and keep propagating in order for the human race to survive. We will be eternal beings. There won't be a need for that. And he compares us to the angels who are eternal beings now, and they're not having kids, right? He calls us sons of God, sons of the resurrection. It's unbelievable what he's going to do to us, and I can't even explain what this spiritual nature is, but one day we'll be looking at him in his face. And we'll get to see with our own eyes what that is. Then he says, as he closes with this, if there's a natural body, there's also a spiritual body. Like, I know it's hard for you to understand. I get it. He says, thus it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living being. The last man became a life-giving spirit. There's a big difference between Adam and Jesus. Jesus is called the second Adam. Because what Adam did to give life and then take it away by his sin, Jesus came to reverse it and give life over again. He's the better Adam, the best. And Adam was made, obviously, in a garden from clay, some dust that God breathed into. Genesis 2, God went down into the dust. He breathed into it this shape that he formed of a man, and it came to life. You're basically clay, but not with Jesus. What Jesus has come to do is to change that and give us this unbelievable spiritual aspect to our bodies. And it's going to be the most amazing thing. But listen, he tells us here in verse 47, the first man was from the earth, a man of dust, and the second man is from heaven. As was the man of dust, listen, so also are those who are of heaven. Just as we've borne the image of Adam, the man of dust, we shall also bear the image of the man of heaven. We're not gonna, instead of bear the image of Adam, bear this spiritual image. We also, it says, will bear the both. We will be able to be in the physical realm and in the spiritual realm. Y'all, like, my mind's exploding up here. I don't know if you can tell or not, but this is unbelievable stuff. Right here, 1 Corinthians 15, boom, right in your Bible. Like, all of this information is at your fingertips to be able to go through. Paul's given us tons of information about our future, our eternal destiny. I hope you're reading it. So you're like, hey, Rob, so what does that mean then? What will my body be like? If my body is going to be in the image of Christ, the way he was when he was in his resurrected body in the Bible, what is that like? Well, I'm glad you asked. Let me tell you, his resurrected body in Luke 24 could do this. He could appear and disappear. That's pretty awesome. Like, I want to be able to do that. John 20 tells us that he could go through walls. He could pass through walls. Luke 24 says he could transport himself by a thought. Also, Luke 24 tells us that he could eat fish and honeycomb. Listen, I'm not saying that because I'm hungry right now. I'm telling you that because what that means is he could do physical things as well as spiritual things. He wasn't just this ghost that was like, ooh, I'm going to float through the wall. You know, like, that's cool. He could also do physical things like eat and digest food, meaning he was physical, but also spiritual at the same time. That's unbelievable to me. Luke 24 says he could sit with the disciples and show them his scars. He still had the scars in a glorified body. He could go, look at this is where the nails went in. This is where they put the spear through. This is where the crown of thorns was. This is where they beat me and ripped my beard out. Like, he was still able to show them scars in his glorified state. He was still him, right? Luke 24 also says he could speak and be understood. So he was like not just some ghost. He was a thinking, reasoning individual like we will be. Acts 1 tells us he was incorruptible. Sin couldn't even tempt him anymore. Like, he was in his glorified state. He was beyond that. There was no sickness, no death, no fading, no sin. Acts 1 tells us that he was powerful in a way we can't even comprehend. He could do things in his glorified body without the fact that he was God. Just the fact that he had a glorified body, he was able to do powerful things. That means we will be able to be too. John 20, finally, it says he was glorified. I don't even understand that one. That one is so far beyond understanding. Like, I know it means I'm going to be like God, but really being glorified, can't experience that until we're standing in the presence of God himself. What an amazing thing to be able to look forward to. Listen, all of these things, this is just a short list that we're able to glean from scripture if we look at how Jesus was in his glorified body, to be able to be like, hey, that's what we're going to be like when we have resurrected bodies as well. I don't know if that jazzes you or not to think like, holy cow, that's incredible. God's going to do that for us. But here's the deal. I'm not as excited about how awesome that is, even though I agree, it's really awesome, as the fact that it means that that body's going to be able to stand in eternity in the presence and glory, full glory of God himself, and not burn up. I'll be able to spend time with God in his full glory. He's changing this broken flesh suit out for something so much better, a better upgrade, so I can be with him. The gift is being with him. It's not so you can be Superman or some X-Man. Like, it's about having what we need so we can be in a whole relationship with our Creator. That's the best part, y'all. We're going to be like Christ. Philippians 3 tells us, who will transform our lowly body to be like his glorious body by the power that enables him even to subject all things to himself. Like, you will be changed if you are saved. 1 John 3 says, beloved, we're God's children now, and what we will B has not yet appeared. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him because we shall see him as he is. We're going to be like him in that resurrected body. If you've confessed your sin to Christ, if you've trusted him for forgiveness of that sin, here's the warning. Then for us tonight, don't get too attached to this life. Don't be so comfortable in your flesh suit, in your world, in your brokenness, in your sin, in your habits. When Jesus comes along and offers you the most unbelievable upgrade you've ever been and ever will be offered, that you'll be like, nah, I'm good with this. I'm comfortable here. This feels good. I enjoy this. I don't need that. Philippians 3, verse 8 says, indeed, Paul's telling us, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. For his sake, I've suffered the loss of all things, and I count them as rubbish. That word literally there, the trash or garbage, literally means like dung, like poop, in order that I may gain Christ. Paul's saying all the best things about my life, all the things that I feel comfortable in, all the things that are so valuable on this earth, I count it as trash compared to getting to be with Jesus. I hope you're pumped about what he's going to do for you and the new body you're going to get and all the incredible things in heaven, but I hope you are far more excited. You get to be face to face with your Savior. You'll be able to live in eternity in his full glory and really experience who he is. Because that's what he's offering you tonight. Will you bow your heads and close your eyes with me tonight? As the band comes back up to lead us in another song of worship, would you just kind of think on these things for a minute? Maybe just thank God and say, Lord, thank you that you are so kind, that you would offer me forgiveness, that you would offer me a new life. Thank you that you would die on a cross for me. Thank you that when I look around at this broken world, this is not all there is. There's something greater awaiting. Maybe tonight you would even ask yourself this question as we sing this next song. Do I want Jesus more than anything else? Is he my greatest treasure? Maybe you would even stop tonight and in your heart you would just pray that right now and just say, Jesus, I want you to be my all in all.